Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is writer and visual artist Ben Shattuck. His new book is Six Walks in the Footsteps of Henry David Thoreau, but tonight I want to talk with him about his artwork. Ben, welcome back to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be back.
Let me tell you about my experience. You know, I picked up Six Walks. I had never read anything by you up to that point and obviously enjoyed the book tremendously, which is why we did the previous interview. But throughout the book, I'm looking at these illustrations going, whoa, like, what's the deal? And then come to find out, I went to your website and you're an accomplished visual artist. And I want to talk to you about your artwork. Which came first, the writing or the art?
I would say the art. I mean, I'm not sure if I mentioned this in the last interview, but my dad is a landscape painter, and we have painters going back all the way to the Hudson River School in my family.
Fantastic.
Aaron, yeah.
Well, give me your father. What's your father's name?
His name is William Shattuck, and he has a show right now of his landscape paintings at the New Bedford Whaling Museum.
What, is he a fairly traditional landscape painter?
Yeah. Pretty,
so you grew up in a house that
close,
had
yeah.
all the paints and the canvases and all that stuff all around.
Right, yeah. I would do my homework on the floor of my dad's studio, so, you know, turpentine still reminds me of childhood.
That's great.
And it was really, you know, he is a... not only is he a landscape painter, but I knew before, you know, high school, the difference between Hudson River School painters, luminous painters, Trump Loy. I mean, all these.
So all you knew all those. You knew all those terms that you usually don't get to until art school. And for people who don't know who the Hudson River School is, can you just say a word about that?
Yeah, 19th century school of painters. Church, Bierstadt, they painted grand American landscapes, and it was centered in the Hudson River Valley. And offshoots of those were, for instance, the luminous painters who treated light as their main subject matter, reflecting off of sky and water, real tranquil, beautiful paintings. You'd recognize the paintings if you see them.
That's right.
The grand American landscape paintings.
We have a great art museum here in Worcester, the Worcester Art Museum, and they have several great examples of Hudson River painters. And we actually had a Hudson River painting school show a couple of decades ago. As a matter of fact, I've been compared the way I look. I think it's Bierstadt. I forget. Somebody thought, or maybe church. I can't remember.
Yeah.
So you grew up, but that's a fairly traditional use of paint. Did you go to art school? Did you take art classes?
Well, I went to Cornell School of Art, Architecture and Planning, and when I was in high school, I thought I was applying to the architecture school, but I mistakenly applied to the art school, which is something only an 18-year-old boy would do. And so when I got to campus, I expected to take architecture classes. I was really interested to design buildings, and he gave me my curriculum, which was all studio art classes, and I said, excuse me, I'm supposed to be in the architecture school, and they looked at me like, you know, I was a complete moron.
Wow.
And so I sort of mistakenly fell into the art school.
These are the kind of stories that you go, yeah, but how fortunate it was that you were a total dweeb.
Oh my gosh. It is a complete pleasure to be an art student in college. I mean, the only expectation is to define a practice of self-expression, which is, you know, much better than sitting at a computer trying to measure out floor plans in the architecture school.
I know. Can you imagine? And probably your writing career probably wouldn't have happened either, maybe? Like, all your time is going to be into the technical aspects of architecture. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I just want to say that here. But your art and your writing seem to go hand in hand.
Yeah, it was art, as I've said before. I do both now. Seasons of painting, seasons of writing, and I run to the painting studio, but drag my feet to the writing desk. It is such a joy to do painting, and I think everybody who's a visual artist experiences that you can really connect to your, you know, almost childhood self who loves to make drawings, who loves to put a crayon to a piece of paper and see the mark that's made. There's something like really old. I mean, even, you know, cave paintings, there's something ancient about.
I know, it's amazing to look at cave paintings and realize they're having that same kind of experience.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's really similar. And so I had a lot of time outside of painting to write stories and to take English classes. That was a dream. But right after college, I moved to Boston, and I had a studio in South Boston in an old distillery and in the basement of an old distillery, and showed paintings. That was what I did all the time galleries and Massachusetts. Yeah.
Talk to me about the evolution of your style and your subject matter. When I look at your art now, I find it fascinating. It's very painterly. It looks like there's a lot of impasto, is there?
Yeah, you know.
But hold on. But at the same time, completely indicating that your choice of subject matters reminds me of Dutch Republic painting. Dutch paintings of the 17th century.
Yeah. You know, with painting, I mean, I think it's like if somebody I always wonder when you look at a stage of a symphony, like how did each of those musicians choose those instruments? How do you choose the clarinet over the violin? How do you choose, the drums, whatever it is? And for me, it's interesting. In an art education, you usually draw first, and then you pick up acrylics, and then oil paint is at the top of the ladder. For me, when I picked up a paintbrush with oil paint on the end and applied it to a canvas, it was like everything made sense. It was like the music I could play. There's something about how it stays wet for so long, how you can be so gestural as opposed to watercolor, which is basically a system of staining the paper. You can make no mistakes. It's incredibly hard.
It's unforgiving. It's unforgiving. Yeah. You have to learn tricks in order to work around it.
Right. You see those Sargent or Winslow Homer watercolors, and if you've ever painted before, it's jaw-dropping. I mean, it's so hard to make a satisfying watercolor painting. And so with oil paint, it was just it was a thing that made sense. And likewise with the subject matter, I'd grown up, as I say, on the floor of my dad's studio looking at landscape paintings, looking at the real world. And I'd also been a big reader and enjoyed, very traditional novels and traditional books. And when I went into a museum, say, Museum of Fine Arts or to the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, those Sargent paintings, those Rembrandt paintings, they're just the ones that it's like hearing, to bring back the music metaphor, hearing a song that you've never heard before, but you can't get out of your head. That was the sort of art that I loved. And incidentally, I mean, I think we talked about this before, the sort of writing that I do, or novel making, or, you know, prose writing as it is, a lot of it originated within that 19th century period as well. If you think of anybody, you know, Dickens or whomever, the peak of fiction writing originated in that time as well. And so I think it all goes hand in hand, but it just seemed like the only art that I wanted to do was figurative oil painting.
An interesting question just occurred to me while I was listening to you talk. Do you listen to music while you're painting? Or do you need absolute silence?
I never listen to music while I'm writing.
Yeah, I know. I do the same thing.
Yes, listening to music in the studio, I think, is one of the greatest joys of being a painter. And treats.
And what?
And treats. It's like a treat because it's such a joy to listen to music you really love in a space while you're being creative. But with writing, you just have to stay so focused that I can't listen to music.
Well, I want to start out talking about your evolution in your artwork. Everybody goes through different journeys. So did you get, did you have a dalliance with modernism or postmodernism or abstract painting or anything like that? Or did you go right to figurative work?
Well, I did go to art school in America in the early 2000s, which means it's impossible to not feel the pressures of a professor who or two who push you either willingly or very unwillingly to towards different modes of art making.
Did you rebel?
Well.
It's tough. It's tough to rebel when you're the student and they're the teacher.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because what you'd think would be rebellious art, which is, you know, abstract painting or conceptual work or whatever, you know, things that are marked in museums as societally rebellious, are really sort of run of the mill. If
right.
you go into an art
right.
school and paint a landscape or a still life, that is the craziest, most rebellious thing you could possibly do. I mean, I remember one of my professors telling me one day, he said, the problem is your artwork doesn't mean anything. And I did a bunch of, while I was in school, I had a show of landscape paintings in Martha's Vineyard and I needed to complete them. So I had them in my studio. And took that. I mean, there's one way to take that as an insult, and he meant it very much as an insult. But I took it as like fantastic. I love that my art doesn't mean anything except for itself. You know, that I was really tired of art that was just watered down conceptual
yep.
projects
yep.
that had
yep.
no visual impact, and I was much more interested in the time at representational art taken to different levels or new levels or finding pockets that had been yet undiscovered and that only meant the painting only meant itself. That was, I don't know how else to describe it.
I totally understand what you're saying. And the other thing is, by doing work like you're doing, you're also concerned with aesthetics, which is a word that is like a dirty word at art school.
Yeah.
But there's an aesthetic aspect to your work that's very, very clear, very obvious. There's a beauty and an interesting aspect of the balance and use of light, which I want to talk about in depth in a bit. But you're right. By the way, that guy making that comment to you really makes my hair on the back of my neck stand up, because I've been an art instructor for like a long time too.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that you should get fired for. But that's me.
Well, he loved being a provocateur, I think.
Yeah, and he's being an asshole. What, he's being a rectal sphincter.
Now I know, you know, being in my late 30s, that a 21-year-old is still pretty much a kid. So if you're an adult,
yeah.
you be pretty careful with what you say.
Right? So how did you so you always stayed in that groove. And you just sort of perfected that groove as you went along.
Yeah, I mean, it changed. One thing that I love about painting, to just talk about painting in general,
yep.
is I love when you look at a painting and it stirs some emotion you didn't even know you had. You know, it's like plucking a string
mm-hmm.
On a chord that you didn't really know was there. I don't know what I feel when I walk into a Monet exhibit and see a wall-sized painting of lily pads. It's a feeling I've never had before, but every time I see it, it makes me feel something strange and sort of like otherworldly.
Well, let me talk to you about a work you did that made me feel that same way. Floating Man.
That was pretty recent, actually.
I mean, you have a fascinating interest in light and dark, especially dark, and natural lighting. And
mm-hmm.
sort of reflective lighting of like the moon or something like that.
Yeah.
But I looked at that and so much went through my head when I saw that work. And this is what you're talking about. I mean, you have an experience, an individual experience looking at work. And that's what looking at artwork should be about.
Yeah. And unlike literature, it's almost like a lightning strike immediate reaction
yep.
that you don't know where it comes from, and you don't know what to do with it, except that it is a unique bond that you have with a painting. I think painting or visual arts has that ability. It's like forging a new link immediately and out of nowhere, and it only exists when you interact with that piece of work. In terms of, you know, the light and the dark, and you mentioned before the Dutch influence, which very much is there. That's in part a development of just the formal characteristics of painting that I love. You know, it's the way I think most of us see the world. There's no tricks. You know, the tricks of perspective or foreground, mm-hmm. middle ground, background, right. The tricks of light. It's just the one thing that you're looking at, the one object with darkness enveloping it is. Well, that's why I painted it, because I can't describe it very well. But it is a quality of seeing that I understand to be true to, you know, the human experience.
But that's interesting that you said that, you know, you can't really express it verbally, but you can express it in the paint.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You got to get it. You get it out there. And it's on the canvas. You often go back after a couple of days or a couple of weeks, look at a canvas and have a totally different reaction?
Yeah, right. I mean, to go back to the Monet example, you can't really describe lily pads on why that would be an impactful painting. You know, if I just painted a bunch of lily pads and the reflections of water, but then you see it and it's an individual experience and an obvious experience. That's the point of painting, is to do the thing and to create new visual language that somehow still impacts people.
For me also, I can go back to a painting at different stages in my life and it'll be the same painting, but I'll have totally different reactions to it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I totally relate to that. And also, do you know when anybody is like, walked into their childhood home or gone to a house they haven't been in years, and you smell that old smell of a house and you're just brought back to that moment exactly. I find paintings can do that too.
That's like Proust's cookies, the Madeleines. He took a book, bite of a cookie, and suddenly he's remembering his entire life. Let me just do it. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is writer and visual artist Ben Shattuck. His new book, which I strongly recommend, is Six Walks in the Footsteps of Henry David Thoreau, which is illustrated with his artwork. Ben, I want to make sure I talk about this before we run out of time.
Yeah.
This use of dark is just amazing to me in your work. I mean, there's so many, whether it's the floating man, there's fish in a jar, there's a palpable darkness that's a force in some of your work, not all of your work, but talk to me about that representing of that darkness and what it means for you, and how did you come to that? That's a really sophisticated way of looking.
I think there's two answers to that. One really has to do with place, and that's, you know, I live on, and I talk about this in a book, I live on the peninsula and in the house that was my great-grandfather's, and I've just always, everything, even if I'm not painting the place of South Coast, Massachusetts, it's really just everything. It's woven into everything I make, I think. And part of that is where I live on the edge of this salt marsh, there's this big bay, and across the bay, you can see the lights of houses turning on, and it always as a kid, and even today, when I see that, you know, just a huge swath of the dark sky and the black water, and maybe a faint outline of the trees, and then these lights in the distance across that gap of water. There are a couple of paintings that are like that, you know, Fire in the Marsh.
Fire Across the Water. Yeah,
Across the Water. I mean, I think all of the paintings could be called in one way or another Fire Across the Water. I mean, it's that image of a single but really you know that there's people in that house, that there's life in that house, that there's just this little dot of life across all this darkness just really touches me deep down. I don't know why. I can't. Whistler certainly got onto that too. So many of his paintings really foggy with just a dot of a light or two in the horizon.
Well, you bring it to a real extreme in the painting Lobsters in Moonlight.
Right.
Which is just so almost there. It's like you're looking at a weird apparition that's disappearing. It's vanishing into the darkness.
Yeah. Well, that is the other. I mean, I love that. That is one of my favorite visual experiences to see a half-seen thing where your imagination has to catch up with what's actually filtering through. And I tried to capture that in. You know, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, that painting. It's a typical still life in a way, but it's as if the lights were just dimmed down to almost blackness in a room of a still life. And you sometimes see this in the old Dutch paintings, too, those old still lives where there's the fish and the lobster and the oysters and the half a lemon and, you know, the flowers dripping with water with beetles on them. And the light is just so low. You can barely see anything, but it's still there. And it's like you're trying to, it's like the painting trying to catch its breath to try to, you know, restart and come back to life. I love that feeling. It's like an activation.
Well, you also paint things through glass. There's like fish in glass and that's a very Dutch Republic effect too, that fascination with transparency and what it does to the things that are on the other side of the glass.
Yeah. I think that's an endless, there's some images in our everyday life that I don't think people can stop looking at. For instance, one of those would be a bouquet of flowers.
Yeah.
Why is that interesting for centuries and centuries and centuries? And that question is best answered in my mind, or maybe not answered, but framed at least, by making a painting of it. And certainly the Dutch.
And you did that. You did several flowers in porcelain vases, which looked totally different from the rest of your work.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, to respond to that teacher who said your art doesn't mean anything, it's partly my very response is to just, meaning is irrelevant because the making a painting of flowers, it is important and is seductive and is interesting regardless of meaning. Like, it sort of shirks meaning, doesn't need meaning. And there in itself is a question of like, well, what does that mean? You know, so it's like, I'm just going to go back and paint the most traditional still life I could possibly think of. And that's a big bouquet of flowers because we still don't have the answer of why we love looking at those flowers. I mean, you know, the Van Gogh sunflowers are some of those famous paintings in the world. And we just can't stop looking at, you know, a bunch of flowers stuck in a vase with the water and the glass distorting how the stem and how it moves into the water. It is, and it's like an old question that I love returning to.
We're going to run out of time before I get to ask all the questions I want to ask to you about your work. There's some of these works that seem to have a mystical edge to them. Like The Offering. They seem to be ritualistic or mystical or occult, but that may be me reading into them. The Offering sounds pretty mystical.
Yeah.
And it's very dark and weird. And I mean that in a good way.
that's a great compliment. The weirder the painting, the better. After graduating Cornell, I then went to New York and got a job that I really couldn't stand in an advertising agency in Manhattan. And then by just a lot of luck, found my way to Norway, where I was living and painting with the well-known, amazing prophet of painting, Odd Nerdrum, and he has a studio.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I lived with him for a winter and painted under him. And anybody who knows Odd Nerdrum's paintings, just go online and take a look. He, you know, there's a real dark Scandinavian quality to his work. And he lives in this, I guess you would call it an estate. There's a courtyard in the middle with a Viking boat.
Man.
He only wears animal skins. You know, he paints for 10 hours a day. When I first got there, there was a dead sheep hanging from the ceiling of his studio, and my first job was to cut that down and bury it because he'd been painting it. It was just, and all his paintings have titles almost like The Offering, and I would say that occult mystic quality comes directly from being under the brilliant, unique mind of Odd Nerdrum. Yeah.
What an incredible experience to have had.
Yeah, it really was, and it is. He really showed me, you know, he doesn't use a computer drive, he just runs a studio as if it was Rembrandt's atelier, and he really showed that you can live outside your time without all the distractions of our present day. And you know, one of Odd Nerdrum's famous quotes that he had said when I was there to me was, "I don't compete with my time, I compete with all of time." So he, you know, Rembrandt is in his mind his contemporary, and I think that's, you know, the greatest thing that you can think of when you're sitting down to make a painting or writing a short story is, you know, Tolstoy or Van Gogh are your contemporaries, and you should be thinking about your art in comparison to them rather than, you know, creating a fashionable piece of work.
We're going to end on that point. That was a great, great point to end on. I have so many more questions and could talk to you. I want to tell people who are listening that we have the link to Ben's website on the webpage at WICN. My returning guest tonight is writer and visual artist Ben Chaddock. I want to mention that his new book, Six Walks in the Footsteps of Henry David Thoreau, is not only a great read, it's profusely illustrated with his own artwork. Ben, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's so nice to talk with you. Thanks so much.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.